Villa Park coming up. Fourth down in Naperville here.
Adam Amin.
There's a deep drive to left field in London from Castellanos.
Chicago Bulls TV play-by-play man.
Adam Amin, Stacey King, glad to be here.
Dosumu!
Game time!
Ayo Dosumu! The putback! It's the biggest play of Ayo Dosumu's career!
The NFL on Fox.
Look inside the broadcast booth, Adam Amin looking downfield, nothing there. Spins away, throws on the move, it is caught! Rome Odunze connects with his fellow rookie. That is in the bucket, off platform, away from the arm side. That's the type of stuff at USC that was dropping jaws of scouts across the country.
Fox Sports Baseball play-by-play man.
3-0 on Leury. Fastball, slider, curveball mostly. Leury Garcia sends one a deep center field, and the Red Sox have taken the lead in Game 3.
Adam Amin with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We are delighted to have our buddy Adam Amin in the building. You'll be able to check out his Bulls work on CHSN as the season gets ready to get underway. You will hear him call Bears-Rams on Fox this weekend. And he apparently is now just the Rams play-by-play guy. Because every time they're playing, he's out there with them.
Even welcome. Brady gets to get off the Cowboys this week.
I know.
I was going to say, this is a third straight week for the Rams. Now, it was, I think some people were under the impression, and they were correct up until about a week ago, that it was going to be Tom Brady coming in to call Rams-Bears. And as often is the case across every network that ever televises live sporting events, there was an audible call about a week and a half ago, and I was happy with it. I get to stay home. I have no issue with that whatsoever. And the prep is way easier this week because, again, we've seen the Rams 2 weeks in a row. But I wonder what the thought process was. Be like, we don't want to put Brady on this thing.
I was going to say, so is that, the Bears might not be as good as we thought they were. Let's not bother. And Puka and Cooper are hurt.
I think it had more to do with Puka, Nacua, and Cooper Kupp being hurt. I think it had a lot more to do with all the Rams' injuries and how poor they looked against Arizona week two, because that's when it was the day after the Arizona Rams game where they won by, or the Cardinals won by 31 points, that they were like, why don't we Eagles Bucks seems to be a little bit more of a, why don't we drive you into that direction? And of course, the connectivity of it's Bucks, it's Brady, obviously won a Super Bowl there to cap his career. So I'm happy with it. I have no issue. I'm thrilled. I get to stay home. I get to go to dinner Sunday night in my hometown. So I'm happy.
Tanny made a point earlier this week as this show is coming together, and he's saying, we should probably spend more time talking about opponents. Like, we can do more on opponents. You've seen all of the Rams games so far. What do you think is interesting about them through three games?
I think they have two really good players on their edges that they just got from Florida State in the draft. I think their defense has played really well in spurts. They did really well in the second half against Detroit into overtime. I think they were gassed in that overtime period when David Montgomery just ran all over them. They got blitzkrieged a little bit week two with some of their coverage. They have some coverage issues still on defense, but I think Kyler Murray just played an exceptional football game, and Marvin Harrison was awesome to watch. And I think last week their defense got back to doing what they do well. They contain off the edges. They make life tough on quarterbacks. They miss a lot of tackles, unfortunately, for them, so they probably should have more sacks than they do. But I love Braden Fisk. I love Jared Verse. I think these are two exceptionally talented rookies that are, potential problems for the Bears on Sunday, especially if there's some shifting along the right side with Pryor and some of the tackle issues. Offensively, Kupp and Nacua not being there is a massive blow to them, and I think that was the biggest problem in week two. They couldn't really get any traction offensively without Nacua. Kupp got hurt in that game, didn't play week three, and we were talking about this off the air. They switched to 12 personnel for the first time, I think, in 3 years. They had run very little 12 personnel, 12 meaning 1-2 personnel is one back, two tight ends.
Man.
They are one of the most heavy 11 personnel teams. That's one back, one tight end, meaning there's three receivers at all times. They're one of the heaviest 11 personnel teams in the NFL. So for them to make that drastic of a shift and have it play into their favor in the second half when they needed to run the ball effectively against a really good 49er defense and contain their edge guys like a Nick Bosa, I think it was a really impressive game. So they come in feeling really good about themselves because they just beat San Francisco in a game that nobody thought they were going to win. I think they outscored them 20-3 in the final 19 minutes, something like that. And Matthew Stafford is still really good. I mean, 36 years old, as cool and calm and collected as anybody, and that arm, I'm so excited for the two guys that we have on Sunday because their arm talent in different ways is really fun. I think Stafford's arm is still as good as anybody's in the NFL. His deep ball's really solid. He rifles balls that we already know about the arm slot stuff. He's one of the innovators of it. And then Caleb, I thought, made some elite-level throws against Indianapolis last week in that game. So I'm really excited to see how these two quarterbacks do, but I think there's a lot to appreciate about what the Rams did adjusting over the course from week two to week three.
That personnel shift for Sean McVay is fascinating enough just as an offensive coordinator, and we can think about it that way. But this is a head coach, a made guy who teaches people, and then they go off and they get jobs a million places, including Shane Waldron.
Sure.
I'm currently obsessed with head coaches as communicators, like being not just good communicators, but good teachers of communicating to their assistants, because then they have to communicate with their people. Like, what have you seen from McVay all these times now that you've talked to him, and now a few weeks in a row? Do you see this kind of elite level communication just as a person, which I think matters so much for the leadership?
I think he's a very engaging guy. I think he commands a lot of respect because of his prowess. Like, prowess always will command some level of respect, and then the presentation of that prowess is the thing that typically sucks people in, the gravitational pull of people. And I think that's where he is. He has that type of pull because people already respect his prowess. Raheem Morris and, you know, Brandon Staley's on his staff, they've both spoken very highly of him. Shane has spoken very highly of him in the past, and we'll talk with Shane tomorrow when we go up to Halas Hall in preparation for the game. But I think Chris Shula, you know, who's the defensive coordinator, I think has really appreciated how Sean addresses the team, how he addresses the group, his coaching staff. I think there's a lot of mutual respect there. And I do think that goes a long way with having understanding of what they're changing, what adjustments they make, and people buy into it. Like, they tried to run some 12 and they tried to run some 11 in week two after Cooper Kupp got hurt. And they're like, all right, Tyler Johnson and DeMarcus Robinson, you're probably not great blockers like those two guys are, and that's why our run game sucks right now. So let's make an adjustment, and they did. They go to 12. They ran 100% 11 personnel in the first three games this year. They ran 95% 11 personnel last year, and they're like, all right, we can't do this right now. Let's change it, and everybody bought in. Their backup tight end played really well. Hunter Long in the run game. Kyren Williams had his best game of the season after two kind of meh games the first couple of weeks. And I think a lot of that just comes from Sean McVay. I think he's the genesis of all that. And that's what you need at the forefront of your organization.
Who's the most impressive head coach that you've sat with in those kind of circumstances in your years of getting to do this every week?
Mike Tomlin. It's the way he engages with people, the way he shoots you straight. Here's how I can compare it to. When you walk in to a room and you feel like you have to earn your credibility, that's most coaches, because they look at somebody like me like, whatever, man, like, who's this 5'5" nothing guy? I'd rather look at the football player and look him in the eye and pretend that you don't exist. And that's okay. Like, that's part of the gig. This is the world that I'm in. Their world. They're not in my world. Even though it's a broadcast, the football game still is at the forefront of it. So it's their world. I know I'm walking into a foreign place. Mike Tomlin assumes that if you're in that room, you deserve to be treated with respect. And I will assume that you have credibility, and I will treat you as such. And I think you can sense that just from a human level. I think I'm fairly perceptive. I don't think I'm stupid, but not everybody that I deal with knows me, knows that, or assumes that about me. So I do feel like I better ask good questions. I don't want this person to think I'm stupid in 4 weeks when I come back to do their game again. So Mike, just from the first time I met him and talked to him and spoke with him, and notice, I think it's speaking with him, not speaking to him or at him. It is speaking with him. I just appreciate the way he addresses you. And he says, this guy's struggling. You'll know how to say it, right? Like, don't throw him under the bus. I'm not here to make my players feel bad. But he's not playing well right now. This is what we're working on in practice. I think you'll know how to say that. And I appreciate that because that is our job. And we take information that's proprietary relative to everybody else. Nobody else gets this specific level of access that we get to these people. So we have to treat that with respect, and he does. And I think we try to reciprocate that.
Your point of view on this particular game is huge because obviously you've called the Rams games and you do the Bears preseason games. How different does what the Bears expected to look like versus what they do look like look to you?
I will say that what we saw in the fourth quarter was an improvement because we saw Caleb Williams be able to do things out of the pocket. I don't think he had a great opportunity in the first 2.5 games to be a pocket quarterback. They want him to be a pocket quarterback. That doesn't mean they don't want him to use his clearly explosive gifts as an athlete to make plays. And again, the jump man throw that he makes to Cole Kmet on the move to his left, that's the same thing we saw with Odunze in the preseason. Like, how do you make that throw? You don't want to take that away, but I understand the thought process of saying, he's so gifted on the outside. If we can somehow harness that and put it in the pocket and let the guys around him make more plays and put him in harm's way on a less frequent basis, I understand the thinking of that. But where this offensive line is, none of what they want to do is an option if this offensive line doesn't pull it together, if the protections don't get better. We did the week one game with Tennessee, and Coleman Shelton had a brutal game. Like, I think he would advise say the same thing, you know, and I'm sure he's been advised to, you know, lock things up. Shane Waldron said today, I got to be better. Like, I hate when coaches say that. Like, I'm not blaming him. I'm just, as a general thing, I feel like you're the one who's supposed to be prepared more than the players. You're supposed to see the game 2, 3, 4 steps ahead.
But don't the players want to hear the coach being accountable so they can trust him?
That's why I say I'm not saying that I'm upset at Shane Waldron for taking accountability for it. I just hate that I hate that that's something you have to say because you're supposed to be the guy who's in charge of all this.
I agree. It doesn't absolve him.
And that's why I know it's kind of a coach cliche. I'm not throwing Shane Waldron under the bus yet. This is 3 games of trying to figure out a lot of moving pieces.
I'm pretty close to throwing him under the bus.
But he's taking the accountability for it. Matt Eberflus is taking accountability for it. They say, 6:30 in the morning on Monday, we looked at the play and we're like, we gotta call it there. Well, that's nice that you're up 6:30 in the morning. Like, you don't have to say, like, talk about what you're going to do better. And again, I know you can't necessarily do that in the setting that they're talking in. I hope that they're more forthright with us. Like, here's what we need to do. Here's the menu of plays that we need to assign to this particular offense the same way McVay did a week ago in our meeting and said, we're going to run 12 because these guys don't block as well as the other guys that are hurt. But we have confidence in them to be able to catch the ball and make big plays. Matthew's going to throw the ball to them. Kyron's going to run the ball. Our offensive line with, by the way, a bunch of backups is also going to play well. Like, they're missing they've had 3 different O-line combinations in 3 games.
All in the interior, right?
No, it's across. It's across all the way board. Across? They've changed centers. I think Kevin Dotson at right guard, who got hurt in the opener, is the only person who started all 3 games at the same position. So they're playing a rookie at center. They're playing a rookie at left guard. They moved, they got Alaric Jackson back from a suspension last week, and he just slotted in at left tackle. Rob Havenstein didn't play week one. Like, they've got the same problems up front that the Bears do, and they played Leonard Floyd and Nick Bosa and Malik Collins and Javon Hargrave last week. And those guys still got after Stafford a little bit, but they won the game.
I don't think it's wish casting if you look from week one to week three with Caleb Williams and go, That guy's getting better. I don't think that is just wishful thinking.
No.
What's your opinion on it?
I see better stuff. There is marked improvement. Now, the volume is a little higher, so naturally there's more chances to mess up. There's also more chances to do good stuff, and I think he's done more good than bad in the last, especially in that fourth quarter. You know, what we saw in terms of play call, the play selection was better. Now, again, they're playing from behind, so they let Caleb be a little bit more aggressive. That's how you end up with 52 pass attempts and 360-plus, but the talent is undeniable. It is the athletic prowess is undeniable. So how do you harness that? How do you make that a part of your offense? And until you get an identity, and I'm not saying 3 games is the mass sample size that is required of you to have a full identity, but this should be marching towards something. And you're seeing some of the positive things that Caleb can do. You're seeing some of the things that Cole Kmet can do. I know he blew that one, the one block against Latu. It happens, you know, but I think he did a lot of good things in the past game. There's marked improvement, And I don't think it's anything different that Caleb Williams is doing. I think it's positioning. I think it's letting him loose a little bit. And I think it's all got to be driving towards some kind of identity. The biggest problem with Chicago sports teams, let alone the Bears right now, is they lack identity. What kind of team are you? What is an opponent going to expect when they show up for a game on that Sunday or that weeknight or that series at the ballpark? They don't have identities. And I think until you decipher what that identity is going to be and which skill sets of which players you're going to put at the forefront of it, it's really hard to do that.
I think they just declared that they want to be a finesse team and have their triple wideout threat and spread out. They spread out four times with three wideouts in the gun on first and goal from inside the five. Four plays in a row. They want to scare you into being able to run the ball because you're surprised.
Third down screen passes cannot be your identity as a play caller and as an offense. Four shotgun runs from inside the five-yard line cannot be the identity of an offense. These guys are having trouble pass blocking. Run the ball. Run the ball four times and see what you're made of. Mm-hmm. See if you can earn yourself a touchdown and in a situation where the game is still in hand and you still have an opportunity to do something. Now, DeAndre Swift hasn't had a great start. The O-line hasn't had a great start. Can those things improve? Of course. But you have to have some form of an identity to be able to run the football. And until you figure out how you're going to do that, they're going to struggle offensively in general.
One more Rams thing for me. No defensive players taken in the first 14 picks in the draft. And then four out of five, including a guy you mentioned, Jared Verse from Florida State. Bears fans got very familiar with him leading up to the draft because they need an edge rusher. What kind of edge rusher is Jared Verse proving to be in the NFL?
I think he and Fisk are the top two rookies in pressures in the first 3 weeks of the season. Runs a tight hoop. He's got some instinctual stuff to him. I like Austin Booker for the Bears. I think he's kind of an elevated version of that. The way Eberflus talked about the instinctual nature of how he is as a rusher, I think Jared has a lot of that. There's a lot of good stuff that he does off the edge. He's got some tricks in the bag. I don't think it's particularly deep just yet. I think it's going to develop, and he seems like the type of player that's going to develop at a pretty solid pace for their defense.
As someone who grew up here and as someone who is the voice of the Bulls now, what does Derrick Rose mean to you?
It's hard not to lament it a little bit because of how, you know, that 2012 postseason just derailed every plan that you have. It's hard not to be somewhat, I'm bitter at this point, but the fan in me is kind of like, man, if only. There's a lot of if only with him. But I've also seen a lot of wonderful things from him. He made those years of watching the Bulls exciting. You know, listening to Neil and Stacey call those games and all those epic moments and listening to Tirico on Christmas. I think that was the lockout season, if I'm not mistaken, right? When they came back and played the Lakers on the road and he hits that shot, the bank shot against Cleveland. Like, all these moments are indelible for a franchise that hasn't had a ton of them in the last 15, 16 years. Like, he's responsible for so many of those things. And the way that his teammates revere him and speak of him with such reverence. Anytime we have Joakim or Carlos Boozer on or whatever, those guys just speak about him with such reverence and care and love and affection and appreciation that it's hard not to get caught up in that. I also saw some really good moments after he was in Chicago. I called some of his games when he was at the Timberwolves, and he lit that arena up, you know, in moments where you weren't expecting it. So I think the competitive nature, the drive, him being one of us, so to speak, one of ours, it's meaningful that he's retiring. I hope that the Bulls, and I don't doubt that they will do something, but at some point that there's a night dedicated to him and his career, and hopefully he gets one last ovation at the United Center.
You've seen how the place lights up when you've been there to call a game and Derek is on the bench for the Knicks.
Sure.
And everybody's focused on him, weren't they, during games like that?
It was a blowout game, and he comes on the floor and the whole temperature of the room changes, the whole temperature of the arena changes, because everybody, you know, they're gravitational people. You know, we were just talking about McVay and kind of the, you know, what a magnetism is and what gravitational people are. And typically it's because of, I'll go back to the word prowess, like typically the high prowess people are the ones that are the gravitational, and that's fair, that's true. But when you lose some of that prowess, there's still something inherent in certain people that draws you in. And I think Derek has always been, maybe it's his quiet nature. Mm-hmm. I think his demeanor has always kind of resonated with people. He never barked at people. You were scared of him when you played against him, right? Like the Miami Heat talked about that. Like, we don't want to play some of those teams that the Bulls constructed and that Derrick Rose was a part of. So I think he still has this magnetism and this draw that it's impossible not to notice and appreciate. And then when you're in his presence, it's impossible not to feel.
You're so right. And Speaks, you pick up on this. This is one of the best things about you as a host is that the human nature that is combined with sports. Something about Derrick Rose, like, it's a feel. It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
It's hard for, because even people that are listening to us, they're having an emotional moment.
Yeah, man.
Thinking about something that Derrick did that got to them.
Yeah.
And maybe made them a fan. It's a strange thing to even talk about, but we all know that we're feeling it.
Yeah, because it's the combination. I mean, Adam's right about the quiet nature, and you touched on it with his not dancing and the defiance. We love that. And then, oh, by the way, there may never have been a point guard that athletic. There may never have been just a pure basketball specimen like that we had, and we were told can't win with that, and they were the number one seed in the East. You were told can't win an MVP like that, and then he won an MVP.
Youngest ever. And it's, you know, like, there are other players like that, but we don't have, like, we haven't had somebody
we
like
hadn't
that,
had
that, that we had never seen somebody like that for that era. Again, Jordan was who he was to the era, and he was one of the most dominant athletes and forces for his size at 6'6", relative to the centers that were so popular in that stretch of time where he was dominating the league. That was inherent to that portion of time. When we advanced eras and it became more of a scoring guard era and the combo guard was at the forefront rather than the center being at the forefront of it, we didn't have anybody like that. And that was the first time I'd seen somebody inherent to his era that was could be just so dominant. And again, the demeanor sticks out to me. I love the Dragic play, obviously, like we all do. But the bank shot in the playoffs to beat Cleveland, it's not the shot necessarily, because we saw him make a bunch of game-winning shots. It was the look on his face where he's like, that's what I do. His mouth never moved. It was a dead stare. And that shot of the guys clutching him while his arms are just at his side, with this stone-cold assassin look on his face, is the indelible image to me, with all the athleticism, with all the dunks, with all the power that he played with. The thing that will always stick out to me is that look on his face that just showed you the type of gravitational person he is. You should expect this from me. That was Tiger Woods. That was when he made some shot at the U.S. Open. I remember Dan Hicks making the call saying, did you expect anything different when he made a shot? I think it was against, in a playoff or something like that. And that's how I feel about Derek. Like, what else did you expect was going to happen in that moment? He made the shot and he turned around, and that look on his face indicated that you should have known that was about to take place, because I knew it was about to happen.
Adam Amin is going to be on the call for Bears Rams on Fox at noon with the kickoff. He is our friend, and we are lucky to have him be able to describe things as beautifully as he does.
Rocco Mediate. I almost shouted it out
Thank
before looking
much.
The research.
U.S. Open, right? It was on Monday, in the playoffs.
And poor Rocco.
The weekend of his life, and then who comes out of the blue?
Red-shirted
killer, right? Yep.
That is Adam Amin.
Thanks, boys.
We are Spiegel and Holmes. When we come back, we're going to let you tell us about Derrick Rose. We've had our say. We want to know yours. 312-644-6767 is the number. Let's get after it next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at The Score. And not just kidding.
Afternoons on The Score.
Last but not least, I want to thank my mom, Brother Rose, my heart. The reason why I play the way that I play, just everything. Just knowing that days that I don't feel like going into practice, or I'm having a hard time, think about her when she had to wake me up, go to work, just making sure that I'm all right and making sure the family is all right. Those are hard days. My days shouldn't be hard because I love doing what I'm doing, and that's playing basketball. So you keep me going every day, and I love you. I appreciate you being in my life.
I think I can finally say this now. Mom, we finally made it.
Man, it was emotional that day watching Derek accept the MVP trophy. Is that what that from, Tanny? Yeah, I mean, because it felt like a coronation of sorts.
It felt like Chicago won.
Yeah, and it really did. And during that time, Lawrence, I went out to the Siskel Film Center to see a screening of the movie The Interrupters. Remember The Interrupters?
I do.
Beautiful, beautiful movie about a certain methodology of trying to stop gang violence. Of people like really trying to get out there in the streets and cut it off where they thought it began, and how the police and the gangs both were trying to allow this group of people to get out there and do it. And Derek was at the screening, and I just remember, like, so his whole arc was so connected to hopes and dreams for this city on so many levels. It's an unfair burden to put on one person's legacy.
Especially when that burden starts with him being 19 years old.
Insane. Insane. And when you really think back on it, and obviously there were misdeeds as he found his way in his 20s and his 30s, you know, and raise your hand if you've never had a misdeed in your 20s and your 30s, by the way.
Okay. Shane just raised his hand.
He did. Good call. Tanny, you buying that one?
Not one bit.
Well, considering we first started the show when he was in his late 20s and he's in his early 30s now.
Yeah, well, it depends on who is judging what the misdeed is.
Yeah, no, that's
fair.
If it's
people who shouldn't be, then I've never done anything wrong.
I understand. All right, and I don't mean to excuse the misdeeds. I'm just saying there were some. But when you think of the grace with which he actually lived during those years between 19 and like 24... the grace and the quietness that he went through it, a lot of us would have done a lot worse at that point in our life dealing with all of that.
It's crazy, too, just because I'm 49. Speed, you don't have to tell how old you are. But like what Derrick Rose means to people.
I'm 63.
That are way younger than us.
Not
that
true.
Are Shane's age and younger. It's amazing. So we wanted to allow Chicago to talk about Derrick Rose. 312-644-6767 is the number. Out to Evanston and Mike. Hey, Mike, you're on the score.
Yeah, good show. Speaks well. Those words are really well done about his arc, which I think people forget. So there's a discussion, obviously, it's inevitable, Hall of Fame or not, and that's an open discussion people can have. But how different would his career have looked if, let's say, LeBron did something that really hadn't been done before, right? He joined up with a super team. He had Wade, who is the second best guard in the NBA, already had a title, right? And then he had Chris Bosh, 6-7-time All-Star at the time. Had they gotten to the finals of the Bulls, which was a good chance without that type of super team matchup because they had incredible Thibodeau defense, right? Remember that? And Rose hitting those shots. Kind of a limited roster, though, no other star. How different could his career even be since then? And would he be even considered closer to being? Because, again, the big thing is the earliest MVP ever, right? Which is why this is even a discussion. What do you guys think?
You know what? I got to be honest with you. I don't really care about talking about Derrick Rose to the Basketball Hall of Fame. If you want to have a conversation with me about whether or not his number is retired, I will tell you that his number absolutely should be retired by the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff doesn't matter that much to me because those discussions will happen in a couple of years. But as far as to me, it's more about. This is a Chicago story. This is a South Side story. This is a United Center story. This is what he meant to us, not having to weigh what his career is for Hall of Fame voters.
The one thing I'll say about the Heat and the Bulls matchup is the one year that they had it in a healthy setting in 2011, Bulls won that first game in Miami. And then got swept away 4 in a row. And I was there that night of game 5 at the UC when the Bulls lost 83-80. And the passion and the hope was still there in that building. But that was, Miami was better. So if he stays healthy the next year, do they have a chance to overcome it the way the Jordan Bulls overcame the Pistons? Yes. Can I say that it would have happened? We'll never know. We were robbed of that possibility of watching it.
Out to Palatine and Jones. Hey, Jones, you're on Spiegel and Holmes.
Hi, thank you. So first off, don't think he's a Hall of Famer as much as I'd like him to be. I think his numbers are, last I looked, like comparable in the Eric Snow area, right in there. So anyway, quick story. I had a cup of coffee with coaching him when he was 14 with our AAU team. Took him out to dinner at the old ESPN zone. And this is just a sign of his character and who he was as a person. You know, he's just sitting in the corner and kind of by himself. And we're like, Derek, you know, you can have anything you want on the menu. And he's like, no, I'm good, coach. He just had candy in front of him. But he was just so humble and graceful and polite, even at that age, and quiet. And he really kept to himself. And then the next day, I believe it was, we had a practice. And I'll never forget. First time I ever saw him live playing, I'd never seen someone so quick from 1 foot to 4 feet, whatever his vertical was, and then from point A to point B, like across the court. I remember the play, I still have it etched in my brain. It was a defensive play, and I don't even remember the outcome, but Derek made the tip at the defensive side. The ball was going out of bounds, almost like the Jordan move in the finals. He tipped it back in, ran back in, got the ball back, made a layup. I mean, it was, I'd never seen someone that quick. And I remember going to a Will's Northwood Tap, silent plug for that 30-30 Northway scene, and having beers with my buddies. This was, you know, before I had a phone and whatnot. But
I mean, thank
tighten
you for the
up,
history.
Jones.
No,
damn, dude.
We're going to tighten it up for him. We're going to move on.
I got to say, there was some great stuff in there, though. I wasn't sure where the call was going at first, and then when he got there, think about that, though. At 14, you are the pride and the hope and the dream of your entire freaking community. And to this AAU coach, he's coming off as humble, quiet, kind, and then he sees the athleticism the next day.
And Lawrence, I also don't agree with you thinking that Derrick Rose is a Hall of Famer, like Jones. I don't agree with that either, because I wasn't listening to you either.
Okay, cool.
Hey, listen, whatever else you don't want to talk about, I'm sure somebody's going to want to talk about
it. You can just go right to it. I don't know. Let's go to Brian in Oak Forest. Hey, Brian, you're on the score.
Hey, how you guys doing? We're very happy about your show. Happy birthday to Shane.
Not my birthday, Brian. Appreciate that, brother.
Birthday, Brian. Right.
Just put that in your back pocket for later.
Yeah, no, not till March, dude.
Okay, all right. Sorry about that.
All good.
Back in college, I dated a girl who lived in Pontiac, and Pontiac has a huge high school tournament over Christmas break, and Simeon plays in it every year. And Derek was there, and I can't remember if he was a sophomore or a junior, but he played the first game, and it was an 8 a.m. game, and the place was packed. And this is a Central Illinois gym, and everybody had heard about Derek Rose and how good he was. And you look around, and there's just college coach after college coach in the gym. He ended up actually getting hurt in that game in the second half, and he was out the rest of the tournament. And watching, you know, the 3 days, however it was just amazing to see how the other guys from Simeon had reacted to their leader not being on the team or playing. And that always kind of resonated with me. And cut towards him getting drafted, and I remember having arguments with coworkers that they should have drafted Malik or Michael Beasley because we already had Kirk Heinrich on the roster. So I'm glad that worked out, and happy he's going out on his own terms, and just love seeing him play.
We appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much. You think we should stay here with this?
Yeah, I think we should stay here with this. I think what you, me, and Amin touched on, I'd love to know, and we can get textures on it too, like why Derek is resonating with you the way that he is today. If it's resonating like on the deeper levels, why
like, what is
it? Yeah, what is it about
him? It's hard to describe, so we know that we're asking you a task that it's a little difficult even for us, but we would still love to hear from you, whether it's text or with your phone calls. 312-644-6767 is the number. Derrick Rose retires after 15 years.
At the top of the hour, Mark Grody with everything you need to know from the Bears podium today.
It's Spiegel and Holmes on the score.
Get a free furnace when you buy a qualifying AC with ABC. Financing as low as $57 a month. Or extend the life of your existing furnace with an ultimate furnace tune-up for just $29. Visit 4abc.com and consider it done.
to my baby Pooh. You have always had a basketball in your hand ever since the age of two. As a young man from Inglewood, you fulfilled your dream of entering in the NBA. You are now leaving as a matured man with a beautiful family. You have always loved the game of basketball, and God has a new plan for you. Love you, Mama.
Damn, that is Derrick Rose's mom on his Instagram today as he announced his retirement. It's a whole new world, right? At 35, that man gets to define this portion of his life as he sees fit.
Just you wait until we all have the moment where we feel really old, where little Pooh finds his way to playing basketball. And we're going to be like, wait a minute, wasn't that kid like just like a little kid like a second ago?
Yeah.
And you'll be like,
crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I love some of the text responses that we are getting in, especially from people who are on the younger side of the demo listening to the show. First of all, thank you. We appreciate you. 630 Texas says, Derrick Rose got me into basketball. I'm 27 and always heard about Michael Jordan in the 90s Bulls growing up, but it wasn't until Rose got drafted that I actually started watching. I think Rose bridged the gap between Michael Jordan Bulls and the modern Bulls. I love a text like that.
That's awesome. Here's another. Derrick embodied the city of Chicago more than any athlete before or after him. He was a beacon of hope amid the post-Jordan Bulls, a beacon of hope amidst the violence of Chicago. He exemplified the cutthroat yet stoic ethos that so many Chicagoans feel on such a deep level. His highlight reel is absolutely brutal. The real deal. Sometimes a guy like Derrick means more than the chips and the stats. Reminds us of why we root for the teams of Chicago to be a representation of us. Derrick represented Chicago perfectly.
I love that. That hits me in the feels, and it strikes a chord with me because what you're talking about is exactly my reflex when someone says something sideways about Chicago. Like that thing right there, that's a fantastic text.
Cutthroat yet stoic.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mo, you're on the score.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. I just wanted to make a couple quick points on D. Rose, man. First off, Holmes, I agree with you, man. I think Derrick should have his jersey retired, especially for everything that he meant to the city. But the point that I want to make, man, in terms of let me start off by saying I'm 29. So I'm part of that crew that didn't get to see Jordan. Derrick bought that excitement. I did catch the Baby Bulls era and the Ben Gordon era. But when it comes to excitement, love of basketball, looking forward to watch Chicago Bulls basketball, D. Rose bought that excitement back, man. And there ain't nobody better than hearing it, even though he won't admit it, in the voice of Stacey King. You guys were playing them highlights earlier from the D. Rose dunks and the plays. Listen to the excitement in Stacey King's voice. Listen to the excitement in his voice now over the last couple of years, right? It's, again, he's not going to admit it, and I hate kind of inferring like this, but that kind of exemplifies everything about the Chicago Bulls. There was a different level of excitement when Derrick was playing in his prime and, quite frankly, messing up everybody's favorite point guard. So that's it. That's all I wanted to say, man. I love D. Rose. Love everything he meant to the city. And honestly, wish him nothing but the best.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. A texter says, I think Derrick bridged the gap between the Michael Jordan Bulls fans and the modern Bulls fans. Brought together that older Michael fan and pretty much their kids in a shared fandom of the Bulls. Because you couldn't deny it. If you were a Michael guy and your kid was a Derrick guy, you're like, yeah, he's pretty damn good. I mean, he's no Michael, but yeah, no, I see it. I do see it.
The excitement of Derrick Rose in a breakout situation on a fast break, and you didn't know what he was going to do, because you have to also realize is that small in stature. So it was the amazing athleticism that he was displaying as someone who wasn't, like, when you look at LeBron, not that what LeBron has done isn't remarkable, because at 40, it's truly amazing. But obviously, a guy who's 6'9" and 240 pounds, he's going to be able to do that stuff.
He showed up as half Karl Malone, half Magic Johnson.
But when you look at, comparatively, when you look at Derrick Rose and you go, it is someone from the point guard position, the way that we now kind of look at Ja, when Ja does this incredible athletic stuff and isn't afraid to go up against the bigs, those things are out of sight.
Yes, Jose from Deerfield says, Derrick Rose to this generation of Chicago fan was probably what Gale Sayers was to 60s Ooh, fans.
I love that comp.
Showed a major flash of greatness, and then the injuries took it away.
And everyone who grew up during that era has a story.
Yes.
They saw something, and they want to tell you something about Gale. Absolutely, that's fantastic. All right, let's... Sohail, you're on the score. Hey, what's on your mind?
It's actually your timing is great. I want to talk about a comp for Derek. You know, if you compare his first three years in the league, his star was shining brighter than anyone's. I mean, just in Bulls lore, it's bar none second to Michael Jordan. With all due respect to Scottie and Dennis and whoever else people want to put in there, Derek was absolutely number two in ranking. But typically, when you have that steep of a fall from grace, from greatness, your career usually ends. Derek had this 12-year, you know, mediocrity that we've seen, and it didn't really end. So we're having to rationalize his place in history.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that comp with Gale Sayers, yes, it's true, but, I mean, did Gale Sayers win an MVP and Rookie of the Year and had a legit chance to take the Bears to the championship? I don't know if that's a true comp.
I think Gale's heights.
Nothing like Derek.
I think Gale's heights were as high as Derek's heights. I do. But your point about the extra 12 years to hang on and give you pause as you try to put it all in perspective is interesting.
I would quibble about mediocrity. You know, I would say maybe 7 of those years are mediocrity. There's a lot of good seasons for Derrick Rose beyond the first three as a Bull.
Real quick text who says, the Rose and that whole squad brought back the collective consciousness that Chicago can be a Bulls town, a symbol of civic pride. Joakim referencing playing for the guy in the 500 level, the 300 level, selling streetwise. You know, Derek being from the city solidified that connection. That team made it about way more than traditional sports entertainment.
We thank you so much for your thoughts on this. It was really great hearing from all different perspectives when it comes to Derek Rose. There's some Bears stuff that we need to do. And Mark Grody's Bears report, you do not want to miss it.
And Lawrence, there's an addition to the Bears injury report I just saw. The hell, man.
Well, great. We'll get into all of that stuff next. Spiegel and Holmes with you on the score.